Hello?
Hello, is this Sam?
Hey, Kim.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, way to call right on time. Let's just jump right into the podcast. Cool?
Great, yeah.
Hey, Kim, I want to thank you for calling into the podcast. I know that this is a little different doing media in the middle of a pandemic, and you're calling everyone, so I just want to say thanks for giving me just a little bit of your time.
Oh, of course, anytime. Yeah, thank you. I mean, what else is there to do right now?
Well, hey, before we get started, please, all your socials, all your plugs, all where people can get contact with you, please go ahead. Kim, go ahead.
I'm so sorry, you cut out. Let me see if I can change the audio on it.
Okay.
Can you repeat what you just said? It kind of cut out.
Okay. What I was saying is, if you don't mind, before we get started with the interview, please plug all your socials so people can look you up in the middle of this podcast. They can hear, they can, all things Kim.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. Most of my social media is kim.mcvicar, M-C-V-I-C-A-R. I think my Twitter is actually the other way around, McVicar Kim. And that's basically how all of my socials are, Instagram, Twitter, you know, Facebook, all of the above.
And, well, let's just jump right into it. How you been holding up during COVID?
Pretty good. Los Angeles locked back down again. That's where I'm living currently. And, you know, just learning how to cook is really what's been going down for me.
Hey,
I'm not good at it.
I've been doing the same thing. I'm trying to walk out of this locked down with a new, like, we're in Michigan and we're doing slightly better, but we may be locking down again. So I'm trying to learn another skill. I've been doing some cooking myself, doing a little cleaning, you know, all stuff I need to do. But one thing I've been jumping into is like COVID guilty pleasures. You ever have one of those? And I'll describe. I'm a bit of a sports fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's no sports because COVID. So
right.
Now I'm watching like hardcore cornhole on like ESPN2. They have this thing called marble races, and I am now addicted to that.
You like those? Have you seen MMA? I mean, I've been watching MMA, basically.
Oh, I've been watching MMA, too, but it's not enough. Like, I just watched last week's, what was it, Saturday? I just watched that one, and it just is like, all right, great, great, great. When's the next one?
Right. What do you think of Fight Island? I think Fight Island's pretty cool that that's how they're getting around everything.
Oh, well, yeah, because it's not here. Fight Island, and they have, like, another facility, like, in Las Vegas that they will not give the address to.
Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Oh, man.
And that for comedy.
And I just watched my girl, her light, Paige VanZant. I'm a Paige VanZant fan, and as of last week... I still am, but man, it was hard to watch that one.
Yeah.
But let's talk about why you're actually calling the podcast. Your special's out. I know, before we jump into a rabbit hole, your special is out. Please Notice Me is out right now, and I want to make sure I get this right. It's on Amazon Prime. It can be found on Comcast, Spectrum, Apple TV, Dish, Google Play, DirecTV, Vimeo, YouTube, and more.
Yeah, you name it. It's there.
And then the album version. Okay. SiriusXM, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Pandora, Tidal, and more. All right, you're pretty much out there. How was it, man? This is your debut special. It's very autobiographical stuff. And how do you feel?
It's been really exciting. It's been really interesting. It was shot in January, you know, so a lot has happened since it was shot. So it's very like, it's still relevant, but it is, because 90% of it is just my life, you know what I mean? And that didn't change. It's still what it was. The reception from people has been so wonderful. It's been very, very kind. People have been so sweet about comments, which I much appreciate.
I loved it. I mean, like, since I talk about COVID in the middle of a content starved whatever this is, I got a chance to like really watch it, and I enjoyed it. I'm very curious. You do a lot of stuff about your life. Does your family care when you talk about them?
Oh, very fair. I spoke to everyone that I talk about in that before it was shot, letting them know, because I respect their thoughts. You know what I mean? So all of them were totally okay with me mocking them in the ways in which I did. Also, a lot of the things I talk about are Googleable. So it's like I talk about my brother being in prison. You can Google that. Like, it's not something I said. It's just what happened. And but the interesting part was, I have other family members, extended family members, that I haven't spoken to in a long time, and not for bad reasons, just, you know, we just don't live near each other kind of thing, and they were very supportive in watching it, and then I got a lot of messages that were like, I didn't know this about your family. Well, it's your history now, too. Have fun. Enjoy.
One thing I did get a chance to Google, since you brought it up, is like you're looking at my questions. You toured as a dancer throughout North America, because you're originally from Canada, right?
Yeah, I am Canadian. I still have a green card, but I'm allowed to be in America.
All right. And you toured throughout North America since 10. Now, the only thing that comes up is, like, dance moms. And I'm like, have you ever been in one of those situations like that? Or do you just watch dance moms like, yep, been there?
My mother wasn't a super aggressive dance mom. I've seen other parents be that way, obviously, as a child growing up. But I was just more, like, I never thought I would be a dancer, if that makes sense. Like, I would go to the auditions, but I was just a kid. And I would just go for fun, and I would mess up, and they'd still book me. And I would be like, what? And I think a large part of it had to do with how I handled when I failed. Because I would laugh at it. And it's kind of like, well, if you have to have a person on a team with you, you want them to, like, travel well. And I think that that's kind of where I shined, you know, which is such a weird specific. But, yeah, I didn't have any too many crazy parents. It was definitely interesting traveling as a child, you know, like, now looking back, I can't imagine, like, sending a 10-year-old out into the world like that. Yeah. But it also was a different time, you know, like, I mean, all of the things that were bad were happening. Thankfully, none of it happened to me, but I just can't. I mean,
But, I mean, something else I was able to Google based on your dance career is, like, you were a backup dancer for the National World Dance Choreography Awards. You did the MTV Video Music Awards. You were with P. Diddy. You were with MC Hammer and Kid Sister. And then you went on the more Tony Award size with, like, Tommy Walsh and Dan Knecht and Savion Glover, amongst many other people. I'm curious, when you had this pedigree, what made you want to get into the world of comedy? You get bit by the comedy, but how did that happen?
I always wanted to do comedy. Dance was a backup plan, which is a ridiculous backup plan. I think when I was little in Canada in school, you have to do, like, this project that's like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I handed in, like, comedy. And then they were like, you can't, the homework was to pick a job, and then you had to say how much you made, and then how you would, you know, do your housing and your children and all of, like, it was like a full life projection. And it was like third grade. It was so much information for a young child. And I put in comedian, and my school teacher said, you can't do that. They don't make enough money. And then I back up, and I went, okay, dancer. And she was like, you can't do that either. And I was like, but I already am getting paid to do this. You know what I mean? And then she had to let me do this. So I just had a very different thought process on what you could achieve. And for me, dancing is very fun, and it always has been. But it's never been, like, what I wanted as a career. It's just always been something that I would do, like, a show or two a year, and that was it. Like, it wasn't something that I would do. I would always train. I train 7 days a week because I enjoy it. But it was more of a hobby that I lucked into at a young age, getting jobs. And then once you start getting jobs in something, you know, it gets more jobs because you have a resume now.
Well, one thing about comedy, obviously I've watched the stuff on Funny or Die, and that's kind of where my antennas first came to you. You did the Kim Kardashian show, and you have...
You are good researcher, man. You're going back.
Like, I try to go back. I mean, I don't want to just be like regular radio. And you ask all the hacky questions. No, but I did watch your stuff on Funny or Die. And quite honestly, before that, you come from a very strong improv background, especially your UCB class in particular. I'm very curious, what made you want to go on the stand-up side? Because the way I look at it, and school me if I'm wrong, just please tell me, when you're in an improv True. It's more team and it's more relatable to dance because you are a part of a team. But when you're stand up, you're out there by yourself.
And that's what was so appealing to me. So I was on an improv team, and I won't even say the name because I don't want to get anybody in trouble. It had a lot of turmoil where somebody was sleeping with somebody's girlfriend and things like that happened. And that's kind of when I left improv. And I was always doing stand-up during improv. I actually did stand-up before I started improv. And that was me being like, wait, I don't enjoy all of the turmoil that is happening within the team aspect, and I also want to put in more or less work than other people. And for a stand-up, it's all on you. Like, you can choose to get up 7 days a week, or you cannot get up 7 days a week. Like, it's really on you, and I think that that's similar to dancing more. It's what you put into it, you know? Versus improv, it's like you have to deal with what the other people are saying and things like that. In stand-up, you just have to say whatever you're saying, and then if the audience doesn't like it, well, that's your fault. You know what I mean? Like, it's on you to fix that next time.
That's interesting because you would think, well, I understand it, don't get me wrong, but I gotta know, outside of, was that the first time you, like, wanted to just get on stage? Because usually every stand-up I talk to has, like, some origin story where they were at a bar and someone, oh, I bet you $20 you won't get on stage, or it seemed like, what was yours outside of just, I don't want to dance anymore, what was your thing that, like, was the driving, I guess the turning point was like, okay, I want to get on stage and do comedy now.
When the first stand-up show I ever did, I think I said to somebody, like, I was watching some stand-up, and I've always been into, like, Bill Burr, watching a lot of comedians do stand-up comedy, and then one day I just turned to somebody and I was like, I'm going to do that. And then that same week I got up and did it. I was terrible. My best friend, she brought the head of a network to it, which was not cool. This was an open mic at iOS it's closed now in Los Angeles. And I did 3 minutes in the back of, like, their little tiny room to, like, a handful of people, but one of them was the head of a network. And I basically just read a story. I didn't have, like, a setup or punchlines. Like, it was just me talking about stuff. And, that person who works for the network told me, like, you have something. You totally need to learn structure, but keep going. And that was enough for me to be like, okay, this is it. You know, there are people who believe in me on day one, so why not? Even though I'm so mad at her for doing that. That's the worst.
Well, when you get pushed in the deep end, you either sink or swim, and I think you did all right. And quite honestly, I went back and I watched, in preparation for this interview, watched some of your stuff from Bash Girls Club. Mm-hmm. And I can kind of see where it was like that improv background worked out because you got a chance to do different styles. Even though this special, Please Notice Me, is a little bit more based on your life. And Bash Girls Club, yeah, you had some life stuff in there, but it was more about, like how you say, you were looking for structure. I'm not saying it's bad. It was just like, oh, I see.
No, I agree. I'm getting better. I agree.
Yeah.
I would watch Please Notice Me for sure over the other one. Yeah.
I'm curious. Can you go back and watch your old stuff can you watch it objectively? That's what I'm getting at.
Yes and no. It's very hard to watch things because, you know, again, things are shot and then they come out so much later. So you're already hopefully better by the time it comes out. And then it's like just constantly growth. I am learning a lot from this one. You know, I'm like being more specific with wording and things like that. Like, I have watched it very objectively. I think the other one was just more of like talking in front of a camera, and that's a whole different world, you know. But this one I got to have a lot of say in, too. The other one I didn't get a lot of say in, which is one of the best things. Like, that they let me dance in this one was crazy. You know, like, I was like, I want dancing in my special because it's so much of who I am. The other reason that I put dance in there, too, was because I find when I watch comedy, I always get bored 20 to 25 minutes in. Doesn't matter how amazing the comedian is. My mind wanders at 20 to 25 minutes in, or I get up and get a snack. It has nothing to do with the comedian. It's just my attention span. So I I was like, oh, let's throw in a dance right there.
Yeah, I kind of looked at that too. I mean, while I was watching the special, I was like, yeah, you're clearly the only person with dance breaks in the middle of your special, where it was new. I don't know. I mean, I liked it, but I've never seen it before. But I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's, there's a piece of me that was like, hey, she still got it.
Yeah.
Oh, hello?
Hello?
Yeah, okay, I thought I lost you. I was just saying, the choreography with that, was that just something you had laying around, or was that all new choreography?
So I had a choreographer come in and do it because I didn't want to have to think about creating the dances. I also had ankle surgery 3 weeks before we shot, so I only learned the dance the day before I had the ankle surgery, and then the day before the shoot was our rehearsal, and that's all the dancers had as well. So it was kind of like a crazy fast put it together dance situation, and my foot is like super wrapped up in the shoot and things like that because I had a nerve taken out of my right ankle. So it was like a crazy timing situation, but I was like, I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, one thing I love, you know, asking anyone who calls into the podcast, especially based on your experiences in both dance and comedy worlds, what advice would you give someone, some new artist coming through that just is, you know, based on your experiences, like, hey, you may want to do this instead of this. What advice would you want to give some of the new artists coming up?
I mean, I would say be truthful to you. Like you said, no one has done dance, and that's okay. And it's not going to be for everybody, and that's also okay. But I'm staying true to who I am. And I think that that's the hardest thing in comedy. Like you were saying, comparing earlier stand-up towards now, it's about finding your authenticity and finding yourself. And even or within dance, you know what I mean? Like if you like to dance a specific way, and it's not the way that's trending right now, or it's an older style of dance, but that's where your passion is, go for it. It's actually better to be niche than it is to be like everybody else, you know, from a business perspective. I always think that, like, it's so much better just to play yourself, because then, you know, at the end of the day, you had a good time, regardless of if anybody watches it. You know, you won't just be paying attention to numbers.
Okay, and it doesn't hurt. Those numbers were pretty good, because they were, because I know I watched it.
Thank you so much for watching it.
Oh, of course. Well, I want to leave one more time, but before you get out of here, is it cool if we play a few clips from the special? I feel weird about doing it, but I don't want to ruin it, but I want people to see it, so, because there's a few people, I kind of subscribe to the old Stan Lee comic book version of things, where this is everyone's first time seeing you in some format. So somebody out there is going to learn about Kim McVicker from listening to my podcast, or somebody who may be going on, you know, you get a chance for a first impression. But I do want to ask, to be polite, can I play a couple of clips of the special on the podcast to get people interested to go to Amazon and legitimately everywhere else to see the whole thing?
Of course, of course, of course.
All right, one more time, please give out your socials, and thank you for so much for calling the show. Just having, I know you're a busy lady, especially with this special out, and you want to get the word out. So please, one more time, I want everyone under the sound of our voices to go like your socials, pay attention, find out the next thing, and just have a new captive audience. So please, go ahead.
Thank you. It's Kim.McVicker, M-C-V as in Victor, I-C-A-R. That is my Instagram, and everything else pretty much attached to that. And thank you so much for letting me be on your, I mean, your podcast has been out for over 10 years, which is amazing. So I really do appreciate you talking to me today. It means the world to me.
Oh, thank you so much. And, man, now you're making me feel pretty good about myself. Oh, man, thank you. Here's one last question,
Go ahead, go ahead.
I am horrible with this. And I don't know if you are. I don't know how to take a compliment. I've been doing this for 10 years. I still don't. Are you in that way, too, where you just kind of like, all right, thank you. Thank you. And you start having like a little flush moment?
When people, so for an example, one of the comedy dynamics is the people who are producing this special, and they wrote me an email, like, one of the people in there was like, this is the funniest album I've seen, and I love it, you know, this year. And I was like, I think you say that to everybody, but instead of, like, just taking it for what it really was, you know what I mean? And it turned out that it was this guy's favorite special this year. You know, like, it's just about, it's hard to accept people.
It really is.
Because you're like, wait, what? Okay, you sure? Like,
it really is. Okay, I'm not alone in that. All right.
No. It's something I think, it's easier, if you remember negative things over positive things 90% of the time, but it's something that, you know, we need to work on, because you should, I mean, 10 years is great. Like, you should be so proud of what you've been doing. That's amazing.
I'm like, yeah, thanks, guys. All right, next week. You got to shut it off. Because my biggest fear is if I get too many compliments, I'm just going to go full Kanye. I'm going full Kanye.
You're going to run? You're going to run for president?
And then quit 3 days later, yes. Oh, but thank you so much, Kim, for calling the podcast.
Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye.